The eyes of a newborn child continue to develop rapidly postnatally. Preschool children should be routinely checked to identify problems early on that could lead to vision problems such as amblyopia. Discovering any visual problems as soon as possible, while the eyes are still developing, often requires detecting signs and risk factors not easily noticeable to non-eye care professionals. Due to the young age of patients, tests can be hard to complete accurately, or indeed at all. Dr. Simon Barnard practices in North London and is Associate Professor at the Department of Optometry and Visual Sciences of Hadassah College in Jerusalem, where he's responsible for a number of master's degree courses, including one on pediatric optometry. In this interview, David Cartwright asked Dr. Barnard about the procedures involved in preschool vision assessment and about advances in refraction and strabismus screening techniques, including the utilization of new technologies.
Simon, to start, could you give us a brief background to preschool vision assessment in the UK?
The term preschool relates to children who are not yet old enough to compulsory attend elementary school. And of course, generally this means children younger than 4 or 5 years. The importance of good vision during the formative years led to the introduction of routine vision screening in schools over a century ago. The National Screening Committee sets the policy and provides guidance for screening through a publication known as Health for All Children. In 2003, the National Screening Committee recommended that vision screening was limited to a single screening on school entry at the age of 4 to 5 years, and that screening at the age of 7 and 11 should cease.
So that report recommended school screening at the age of 4 to 5, but would you say that that is the ideal time to start screening children?
I think it's probably the easiest time because all children are going to be attending school. However, amblyogenic risk factors are in most cases present earlier than that. So if it was possible to screen earlier at 2 or 3, that would probably be better in terms of the management and treatment outcomes for these children.
And so at those that sort of age, what are we looking for?
The main amblyogenic risk factors, that is those conditions that will produce amblyopia, are significant hypermetropia and or anisometropia and strabismus.
So there is screening available, but ideally we would be wanting to pick up defects as early as possible. But actually, why are we trying to pick up defects?
Well, I think conventional wisdom is that the earlier one picks up an amblyogenic risk factor, in fact, perhaps before amblyopia has become fully ingrained, it's easier to treat. The child then will go to school with 2 good eyes. If amblyopia is caught much later, then particularly strabismic amblyopia is very difficult to manage, and patients are effectively partially sighted in one eye for the remainder of their life. And there are papers published to show that for some reason, multifactorial reasons actually, that they are more at risk of losing their good eye later on in life.
How important is it to try and get an accurate prescription for a young child?
Well, we're going to rely on retinoscopy, of course, and optometrists are pretty good at doing retinoscopy. This is one of their strong points. It's imperative to do retinoscopy. We cannot expect to get an absolutely accurate refraction without cycloplegia, and even then, on a moving child, it's not possible to get necessarily down to the nearest quarter, nor need we do so, because what we're looking for here is clinically significant refractive error and clinically significant anisometropia. So if the refraction, for example, is about +1 or +1.5 in each eye, that is going to be adequate. As to when one does cycloplegia, this is really down to the optometrist. Some optometrists would advocate doing cycloplegia at the first visit of every preschool child. Others perhaps would only do it when there are risk factors or signs or symptoms reported.
Are there any other tests that we would attempt, perhaps if the child was particularly cooperative?
Stereopsis is a very useful test. It's invaluable, actually, and babies and younger infants may respond to the Lang test. This is crude And the presence of stereopsis does not rule out completely the possibility of a small angle strabismus, but noting stereopsis there can be reassuring in part. Older children can respond to stereo tests such as the RANDOT, and the presence of 40 seconds of arc of stereopsis, stereocuity, that sort of level or better suggests good binocularity and again is reassuring. With smaller children, perhaps two-year-olds, for example, RANDOT animals are most useful. Another test one might try and carry out, although this probably will be reserved for school-aged children, is colour vision. But sometimes you can get a response in an intelligent 3 or 4 year old on the Ishihara.
Given what you've said, Simon, regarding what we ideally should be doing within an eye examination for a young child, how effective do you feel current screening in the UK is?
I think they're effective in picking up the anomalies such as poor vision in one eye at 4 or 5, although it will vary from area to area depending on the protocols. The issue possibly is though that strabismic amblyopia is being detected a little later than it might be if children were being seen effectively at a younger age.
And do you have in your mind when you're seeing a young child, given the difficulties you've clearly outlined with examining young children, what would be your minimum data set that you would want to have at the end of an examination?
If possible, vision, but that isn't always possible. Certainly some assessment of eye position, some knowledge of whether there's likely to be strabismus there. Retinoscopy will enable one to have some assessment of refraction, and if there's any question about the possibility of an anomaly, cycloplegic refraction should be carried out. Stereopsis is very useful as well, and it's very important to have ruled out any obvious health problems, such as if there's a white pupil, and this comes up from time to time. There's a parent saying, for example, there's a reflection in one eye that's different to the other, and unless you can without fail, without any doubt, prove the normality, one should refer the patient under those circumstances.
Simon, would you have any hints and tips for how to get the best from an examination of a young child?
Well, every optometrist who sees young children has their own little foibles for keeping the child's or baby's attention. Don't be afraid of ashamed about making funny noises, having very interesting fixation targets. Don't wear a white coat. If you happen to wear a white coat, it's not good with children. And if you're not sure about something, get the patient back again. They become familiar. Sometimes they're very shy at the first visit and you really can't get very much at all. So don't be afraid of rebooking them for another time. And the other thing is putting eye drops in, of course, can be not the most nice thing for the child. Babies may scream, but so they don't remember it. If you have trouble with a young child putting the drops in and they won't open their eyes, you can put the drop, a big drop, onto the eyelashes, the root of the eyelashes, and it will get in there in most cases. In terms of new technology, or relatively new technology, for looking at the retina, I have found over the last 10 years the Optimap to be a very useful instrument for looking at babies and young children. And very often, one is able to get either a full field, a 200 degree field of the entire retina, or in a baby, even if one just gets the central 40 degrees or the optic nerve, a glimpse of the optic nerve and the macula, this can prove normality. So that particular instrument I've used routinely pretty much over the years.
And I believe you're also involved with the development of an interesting device which may almost automate the detection of strabismus.
I've been involved in the development of an instrument that is essentially an automated real-time Hirschberg test. This is through Iris Medical Technologies, which has partnered with Volk Optical and its specialist imaging unit for the manufacturer of this device. The Voge eye check, as it's called, looks promising in terms of detecting and measuring strabismus. There's been a number of papers presented at one at APOS and one at the American Academy of Optometry conference, which shows a 90% plus sensitivity and specificity for the detection of strabismus using the photography in real-time analysis. It also gives measurements of pupil size, corneal diameter, and lid positions. It's not there to replace the cover test. It is an automated Hirschberg, but much more accurate, we believe. But it will complement the optometrist's cover test. And sometimes when one's not sure, one will do a cover test and a Hirschberg and perhaps a prism test. And here one can use this technique to document and put in the patient's notes that you found normality with that test. And this instrument should be available in the next few months.
So that sounds very interesting. Do you anticipate those sort of technological developments might lead to changes in the way that screening is done, and perhaps could screening then be done by non-optical professionals?
Certainly the Voge eye check can be carried out by non-eye care professionals. However, it's early days in terms of proving its sensitivity and specificity around the world, and if the instrument is as accurate as we believe it is, then there is a possibility that one-year-old and two-year-olds can be screened for strabismus and marked in anisometropia with simple photography and real-time automated analysis.
So that sounds very interesting regarding that technology. Do you feel those sort of instruments would enable screening to be done by non-optical professionals in the future?
If the device is sensitive and specific, as initial studies suggest, then that's possible. But this does not, of course, take away the need for optometrists to be skilled at examining small children and babies. Whereas some optometrists might now not have the confidence to see younger children, they might wish to consider pushing the boundaries downwards, because it's only by seeing normal children that you start to build up expertise. And if in the future there are more referrals of earlier detected strabismus and other anomalies, then obviously optometrists need to be able to deal with those referrals. Much like now when the school screening is done and the child is advised to have their eyes examined by an optometrist in the community.
Thanks, Simon and David.